I'm here with Governor Mary Fallon talking about the first legislative session of your second term. Now, you've got your State of the State address coming up on February 2nd. Just kind of any ideas of what you'll be talking about?
Well, we're very excited to start the next term and certainly this legislative session, but we're going to be talking about a lot of different issues. I think one of the most important issues this legislative session will be the budget and how we analyze our budget, how we appropriate monies, how we have different revenue streams that come into state government to go to important priorities of our government itself, and working with the legislature to help the process work smoother. And one of the challenges that we face this year is that we are anticipating that we're going to have another budget shortfall this year, and it's not so much because the economy's weak, although we have a little bit of challenge with the energy sector, which we're watching very closely. But it's more about how we allocate the money within the budget itself. We have money that's taken off the top of the budget before it ever gets to the governor or to the legislature to be able to appropriate towards things like education, corrections, public health, or infrastructure type related issues. And so we think it's important that we structurally look at our budget. Back 5 years ago, around 57% of our total revenues that come into the state were had the ability to be allocated through the legislature. Now that number's down to 47% just within 5 years. So in other words, if you have $1, about 47 cents of that actually is available for the legislature to be able to appropriate through the process because so much money is already being taken off the top of our budget. So talking about the budget, the structure, the incentives that we have, our priorities for the state, and then certainly the issues that I mentioned in my inaugural address, educational attainment, crime over incarceration, and the health of our state are things that hold us back from doing even better as a state.
Let's talk about some of those items. Education. We've got a new person in charge of the State Department of Education. Have you talked with Superintendent Joy Hoffmeister about what she would like to see and making sure you're both on the same page?
I think it's very important with the new Superintendent of Public Instruction, which is Joy Hoffmeister, that we have an open line of communication. So we've actually been meeting with her ever since the election. Of course, I saw her before then, but we've had many meetings with her. She is getting her feet on the ground at the Department of Education, but we think it's important that we communicate, talk about our priorities as a state, what I hope to see us accomplish, what our goals are for education in our state, and how we can work together to make sure that we increase our education standards, improve our outcomes for education. There's always challenges with revenue streams and funding, and how we can make sure that we're measuring our performance and getting what we hope to get from education for our students.
There's a lot of talk about reading retention and high-stakes testing. Where are we standing right now on those?
Well, those are issues that are certainly being discussed within the Department of Education, within the legislature itself, but my main goal is to make sure that we have standards, that we have accountability, that we measure our progress, that we set outcomes that we expect our students to be able to perform at, and that we have a quality education system in the state. And so we'll continue to have those discussions with the legislators and with our superintendent, but in the meantime, we're going to make sure what our end goal is, and that is improving education in our state, and even improving our high school graduation rates, which I talked about in my inaugural address, the importance of encouraging more students to continue their education beyond high school. Going on to a career tech or getting an associate or college degree is very important to our economy and even to the students and certainly to adults. The more education we get, the better off we're going to be as a state.
As far as prison overcrowding, you talked about that in your inaugural address. The Justice Reinvestment Initiative, is there a plan to go back to that, or is there something new that you would like to do instead?
Well, I signed the Justice Reinvestment Act several years ago, which basically looked at issues involving our prison system itself, the revenue funding streams that go into prisons, certainly looked at staffing issues, looked at how we transition people out of the correction systems once they've served their time and they're going back into communities. And that's what the Justice Reinvestment Act was about. One of the things that we think is important is that we continue to work towards a system that implements those important steps in the Justice Reinvestment Act. And so I actually signed an executive order just last week that said here's the people that actually make the decisions about funding, about policy, and how can we move forward on Justice Reinvestment Act policies to improve our correction system. So I'll give you an example. One of the things we think is important is that inmates have some type of mental evaluation as they're going through the system to determine if they've had a substance abuse issue or if they're more prone to mental illness or even a criminal. You know, certainly they have some type of crime they've committed, but what is the true problem with the inmate itself? We also have talked a lot about how do we step down the inmates once they've served their time and they're going to be released, giving them education and hopefully getting them some work skills so they can be more successful once they leave the prison systems itself. And then substance abuse treatment is very important. We have a lot of people who are in our correction facilities that are nonviolent offenders but have some type of addiction issue that costs the state a lot of money. And so those are all issues that we hope we can work with my steering committee to move forward, not to study the issues, but to move forward to make sure we're making progress in criminal justice reform.
When it comes to health, you'd mentioned the idea of reducing heart disease by 2025. How are we going to go about doing that?
Well, there are many things we need to do on the health front. One is we got to talk to the public about how important it is to take personal responsibility for their health. And that comes through education, certainly with our different health organizations throughout the whole state of Oklahoma. We know that we have way too high a rate of cardiac disease, too high a rate of smoking in Oklahoma, which we've had a lot of discussions on it. Certainly have a high rate of diabetes, obesity. We don't always eat the way we should in our state or get enough exercise. And so those are things that will help us improve the health of Oklahoma if we can address those issues and encourage more people to pay attention to those issues. Certainly have great programs throughout the state, organizations that help us with encouraging better nutrition and exercise, say in public schools. We have a certified healthy schools program. We have a program through the state that also helps educate businesses on how they can be healthier businesses and even healthier communities in our state. And so it's kind of an all hands on deck effort to work towards the issues that cause people not to be well in our state, and that will help improve the whole health of our state.
The Oklahoma Hospital Association has put forth a plan to use Medicaid expansion money to help the low-income uninsured people. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's not an appetite to expand Medicaid in the state of Oklahoma. I mean, one of the big challenges that we have this year in our state budget is because our economy has improved so much in the state, we're actually receiving less money from federal funds for Medicaid. So we are anticipating that we could have about $160 million loss of federal funds to our current Medicaid population of people that are currently on Medicaid. So if we were to add more people onto a system that's already in the hole by $160 million, then that means either services are going to suffer, providers are going to suffer, and we're not going to be able to cover the people we already have, which is already a challenge for us. And one of the things I've expressed concern about is with the Medicaid expansion, that it could cost us up to $1 billion by the time it's fully implemented by the year 2020, according to many different reports that we have seen about the extra costs to the state on top of the current Medicaid funds that we're already short of in Oklahoma. So that's why we're continuing to talk about how important it is to improve the health of Oklahomans, reducing our smoking rates, addressing issues like substance abuse, which has been something I've talked a lot about, especially with prescription drug abuse in Oklahoma. Those are preventable things that we can work on. But on the other hand, we do have Insure Oklahoma, which is a wonderful public-private partnership that I've pushed for. I've gotten several extensions on. I will continue to push for extensions to keep Insure Oklahoma, which is a public-private partnership to help lower-income people and individuals and businesses be able to provide access to health care that's affordable and reasonable for those people. And so far, we have that in the state, which helps fill the gap.
You talked about overcrowding in prisons. Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
One of the reasons why it's important to continue to focus on criminal justice reform is, first and foremost, we want to keep our people who are violent or who would cause harm to people or communities or businesses in prison locked up. But those who have a substance abuse addiction problem, we want to get them the appropriate treatment or help, or even mental health issues, versus putting them in a criminal justice system where they might truly become a criminal because they've mixed with that population. We also know that when people are incarcerated, they're nonviolent offenders with addiction issues. It tends to break up a family. It can certainly cause children to go into our child welfare system and certainly can cause financial strains upon a family, which leads to areas where we have more poverty in the state because they're out of the workforce and not supporting their families and keeping their families together. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's important that we address criminal justice reform, is to help the people who just truly have an addiction problem but are nonviolent offenders, but also keep the people who are a threat to our communities locked up and serving their time.
So it helps the economy of the state overall.
Well, it would help our state budget also, because if we can help people who have addiction problems get their lives back in order and become productive members of society and keep their families together, it's good for Oklahoma, for our quality of life, for our state, for our workforce, and certainly for our state budget.
One thing I did want to touch on, the oil prices are going down. There's a lot of nervous. There was something in the paper today. Breonna Bailey did something about there's going to be cuts, not just in what they spend, but also personnel. How concerned is the government, is the governor's office right now on this?
Well, we are watching the energy sector closely to see the impact of the price of a barrel of oil dropping and how it's going to affect the employment numbers in our state. But an interesting twist of that is we know the state will be hit in some way because of just naturally falling oil prices, but on the other hand, we do have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation at 4.4%. And so as I was visiting with my Commerce Department yesterday, the economist there told me that she had had 37 companies since January 2nd, right after New Year's, come to the Commerce Department saying we're starving for employees. And city of Enid, another example, has about a 40% vacancy rate in jobs right now because they can't find enough employees because the energy sector had taken a lot of those employees into their sector. So as those employees might be weaning off the energy sector through possible cutbacks and drilling in the energy sector, the other industries actually need those job skills, whether it's aerospace, whether it's biochemical research, whether it's agriculture, whatever the industry might be. We think that with a low unemployment rate that there may be room to actually help other industries that have been starving for employees.
So the other sectors could absorb this.
So we hope that the other sectors will be able to absorb some of those possible losses in jobs and hopefully keep our economy up. But we also know that the energy sector certainly pays well, and it contributes a lot to our revenue in our state, and it's a very important part of our economy.